Tears.
Really?
Yeah, really. What had Aunt Hannah said? It's not your competence I question. Being competent was Alex's best line of defense against the monster. Maybe all it gave her was an illusion of strength, but she would take that over feeling helpless any day. She gave the girl a little poke. Come on, we need to get fuel. Ellie scrambled up to comply. She was so eager, she hauled back a small dead pine, the whole bloody tree, as Aunt Hannah would have said. The tree was too newly dead, too green, to be useful, but Alex stifled an impulse to point out to the girl what she'd done wrong. Instead, she showed Ellie how to take from the tree what they could use, dead needles, the thinner branches, and then had the girl segregate and mound the fuel. The foundation's really important. If you don't build it right, you've wasted your time. Now, this is the best part. Tearing open an alcohol swab, nose twitching against the sharp chemical alcohol sting, Alex pinched out the wet gauze square most of the way, then had Ellie hold on to the foil as she lit one of their waterproof matches. "Okay, hang on to the foil," she said, then passed the flame beneath the swab. The swab caught with a very small whoop. A tiny liquid-like flame sprouted, bright and blue. Ellie gasped.
"Wow!"
"Yeah, wow. It's cool because it lasts a lot longer than the match, but now you've got to use it to light the tinder." She watched as Ellie touched off the tinder, saw the yellow-orange bloom as the tinder caught and then almost died. "Here, look," she said, and gently blew on the guttering tinder, which then brightened as hot and blood-red as those fiery sunsets. "Come on, blow. Just not too hard." The fire went out twice, once when Ellie blew too hard, and again when she didn't blow hard enough. On the third try, the fire caught and held.
"I did it!"
Ellie whooped. Alex started to laugh as Ellie jumped up and did a little dance, pumping her fist in the air.
"I did it! I did it!"
"Yes, you did," said Alex, giving the girl a hug. "You totally rock." They sat up for the next few hours, feeding the fire, basking in the warmth. Ellie didn't want to let the fire die down, but Alex finally insisted that they had to sleep.
"But it'll go out," Ellie said. "It'll die."
"Not if we bank it. Here." Using a long, stout branch, Alex showed Ellie how to position the burning wood to restrict airflow. "This is where the ashes get really important," she said, and began carefully scooping out handfuls of cool ash, which she drizzled over the flames. "The ashes are like a blanket. They protect the embers during the night. Tomorrow morning, all we have to do is give the embers some air and fuel, and we'll have fire."
"But if we stay to restart it,"
Ellie's face creased with worry,
"won't that slow us down?"
"No, it'll be good practice. We'll be fine." By the time they crawled into their shelter, Alex felt better than she had in several days. She was still very hungry, but she could stand this. They were close to water, and soon they would be at the ranger station. They would be okay. If they absolutely had to, they could stay put for a day, maybe near the river. Maybe that would be smart. Getting to the rangers sooner wouldn't help Jack, and there was Ellie to think of. Maybe, she thought drowsily, they should hang out at the river, catch some fish.
"Alex?"
She crawled back toward consciousness.
Thanks.
She said again and yawned.
"No problem." "No, I mean, not just for the fire. Thanks for not leaving me."
That made her wake up. Wasn't a lot of this her fault? Not Jack, of course, but if she'd not gotten so freaked, had a bit more patience, they might be in a lot better shape, with food and plenty of water and maps. And here Ellie was thanking her.
"I shouldn't have left you," she said. "You weren't ready, and I was too freaked to see that. You won't leave me again, will you?"
"No," she meant that.
"Promise?"
"Promise," she crooked her little finger. "Pinky swear." After a moment's hesitation, Ellie threaded her pinky around Alex's.
"You won't forget?"
"Never," Alex said, and thought maybe they'd turned some corner.
By tomorrow, when they reached the river and there was water and fish, their worst days would be behind them. Famous last words. Chapter 17. 1 second she was sound asleep, the next she was vaulting to consciousness, fully alert, certain that something was wrong. The light was gray in the shelter, and Alex could see splinters of white through the roof of pine boughs. From beyond the shelter came the early morning chatter of birds. She'd cinched the hood of her sweatshirt down around her head, but her face was freezing, her nose a lump of ice, and she heard the sough of the wind through the trees, and felt it lick her face with its promise of water. Wait a minute. She came up on her elbows, and then saw why she was so cold, why there was wind on her face. The leaves she'd mounded so carefully at the mouth of the shelter were gone. She saw daylight, and she was alone. Her fanny pack was there, but Ellie's backpack and the Glock were gone. She tunneled out of the shelter so fast that the ridgepole came crashing down. She saw in an instant that the fire was as they'd left it, so Ellie hadn't tried to start it on her own. "Ellie!" she called, louder. "Ellie!" She got what she expected, nothing. But she smelled the wet again and understood that the wind had changed direction. What was more, she knew they'd been much closer to the river than she realized. 3 seconds later, she'd strapped on her fanny pack and set off down the trail at a dead run. There came the gurgling boil of water over rocks, another 10 feet through a thick stand of aspen, and then she saw the water churning to white froth. The sight of all that water made her nearly crazy. She wanted to run and dunk her face. No, she wanted to dive in and start gulping. Easy, just take it easy. She unscrewed her water bottle, filled it, dropped in a purification tablet, then capped the bottle and gave it a good shake. In 7 minutes, she would have plenty to drink. This river was wide, 60-70 feet across, with a series of drop-offs and waterfalls that went on for a good 50 yards before tailing into rocky shallows. A tangled trio of aspens had fallen across from her side of the river, where the bank was much steeper and the ground more unstable. The felled trees acted as a dam, forming a single deep pool, not dead center, but to the right, so that water shot left down a natural rock sluiceway. A fourth tree jutted over the water, almost exactly halfway down its length, the trunk forked into a wide V, and the thicker, stouter end of the fork hung over the pool. Ellie was there, rod clutched in both hands, her back and shoulders hunched against the cold. Her feet dangled 15 feet above the water. The open bait box perched in a tuft of smaller branches to her left. The Glock, in its holster, nestled on her right. When she spotted Alex, Ellie threw a look that Alex easily read. "Please don't be mad." To her surprise, Alex wasn't, but she was worried about how she was going to get Ellie to shore without both of them ending up in the drink. Hitching herself out over the water wasn't hard, but the trees were slippery with frost and freezing cold. She could feel the muscles of her thighs dancing away from the frigid bark. She wasn't exactly sold on how stable the thing was, either. Every bump and jostle, every quiver, set her teeth on edge, and she kept waiting for a huge crack. She stopped when she was perhaps 5 feet from where Ellie perched. "So you really think they're going to be biting? It's pretty cold. Grandpa says fish get hungry, too." As if to prove a point, Ellie twitched her line, reeled it in, inspected a tiny orange nubbin on the hook. "What is that? It doesn't look like a worm." "Egg sac," Ellie said. "Really?" Everything Alex knew about fishing could be written on the back of a matchbook, a definite gap in her backwoods education. "You mean like sushi?" She saw Ellie give this some thought. "Sort of. I don't think you'd want to eat it, though." Ellie flashed a look of concern. "I wasn't hoarding it from you or anything." "I know." She uncapped her water bottle, tipped back a mouthful. The water was so cold she got brain freeze, and then gasped as the water burned all the way down her chest before exploding in her stomach. She had never tasted anything so wonderful in her life, And despite the ache, she took another swallow, and then another. She might have kept going if not for Ellie. As it was, handing over the bottle was an act of will. "Drink up," she said to the girl. "We'll fill our bottles before we leave."
"Thanks," Ellie said gratefully.
She took two ginormous gulps, nearly draining the bottle, then cast a fearful look at Alex.
"Go ahead," Alex said. "It's okay. There's a whole river, right?"
"Yeah." Ellie drained the bottle.
"Thanks."
"No problem," she said.
"So, how's it going? You had the bait in your box?"
"Uh-huh."
"It's going okay. How do you know this is a good place?"
"Because Grandpa said so."
"Because it's a pool?"
"Uh-huh. He said you should always cast on the downstream part of cover and not right on top of them."
Ellie prattled on, but Alex listened with only half an ear, her mind already leapfrogging ahead, trying to figure out how to bring up the subject of, "Oh, next time you decide to go hiking, please tell me. And by the way, don't touch the Glock."
"And then you eat them,"
Ellie finished with a flourish. Eat them. That got her attention. Saliva squirted into Alex's mouth and her stomach cramped. If Ellie really could catch a fish or two, she nearly moaned out loud.
"Do you know how to cook them?"
"Sure, don't you? Your dad taught you everything."
"Not this."
"Oh, well, you scale them with a knife and cut open their stomachs to get out all the guts."
"Yuck," she meant that.
"It's not so bad," Ellie said airily. "You save the guts to use for bait."
"You've done that?"
She was genuinely impressed.
"Yep."
Ellie's expression bordered on the supremely smug. "Then you poke some branches into their mouths and out the other end and roast them over a fire, and then you eat them just like corn on..."
"Alex, are you okay?"
"I..." Alex began, but then the odor came again, a harsh blast that nudged the goose flesh along her arms.
"Alex, what..."
Ellie's gaze drifted to a point over Alex's shoulder, and her eyes went round.
"Oh."
Alex knew what the girl saw. Much later, she would think all that talk of food was to blame for what happened next, that if she hadn't been distracted by daydreams of roasted fish on a spit, things might have turned out differently. Maybe. Her heart pounding, Alex turned, already knowing what she would find. A dog. Chapter 18. A few feet in from the right bank stood a collie that looked ragged, thin, muddy, and miserable. A length of frayed rope hung from a worn collar. When it saw Alex looking, its filthy tail whisked back and forth a few times, and then it whimpered.
"Oh,"
Ellie breathed.
"It must have chewed through its rope. Or maybe somebody lost it. It's probably really scared and hungry."
Alex thought that was probably true. After all that talk about wild dogs the night before, she'd been startled at first, afraid the collie was feral, but this dog looked about as dangerous as Lassie.
"Hey, girl."
She had no idea if it was a girl or not, but thought the dog wouldn't be all that choosy.
"How are you? What you doing out here?"
The dog's tail fanned the air, and it danced a step forward and then back.
"Oh, Alex, look, she's hurt."
Alex felt the tree jiggle as Ellie scooted to get a better look.
"There's blood."
There was. A dried, rust-colored splotch splashed the collie's rump.
"Someone shot her."
Laying aside her rod, Ellie hitched herself around and started scooching toward Alex.
"We have to help her. Here, girl, it's okay. We won't hurt you. It's okay."
It was the smallest of movements, and maybe the image of that brown slink disappearing into the woods 4 days ago had stayed with Alex, because her eyes shot left to a dense thatch of underbrush just beyond the collie, and then her stomach bottomed out. Another dog crouched, belly to the ground, behind dense brambles. This dog was dirty brown, with a huge axe wedge of a head, some kind of very big mutt. Really big. And the smell she got from it was danger. Maybe the collie saw her eyes shift and sensed something about to go very wrong, because it let out a short, almost playful yelp. Ellie laughed.
"It wants to play." Now that she knew what she was looking for, Alex's frantic eyes scoured the forest right and left of the collie. She spotted two more dogs in the underbrush, a dusky speckled hound and a ragged German shepherd, its left ear hanging in crusty tatters. Four dogs. Four. Less than a week since this nightmare began, and none of these dogs looked like they'd ever been anyone's pet.
"What are you doing?" Ellie said as Alex pressed back. She let out a yelp, and then Alex heard something splash. "Alex, you made me knock the tackle box. Move back," Alex said, injecting as much urgency as she could without outright screaming. "There are more dogs, Ellie. Move! Move!"
"What? I don't see..."
Alex heard Ellie gasp.
"Go!"
She felt the girl begin to inch away, and she followed, legs still straddling the trunk, palms cupping the icy bark, eyes never leaving the dogs. She watched as the other three slid from the tangle of brush and briars. The collie was no longer wagging its tail, and the playful look on its face had been replaced by what almost looked like rage. The dogs were rigid, ears pricked, nostrils flaring as they sampled the air. Sampled them.
"Go away!"
Her voice shook, and Alex thought, "God, I sound like dinner." She tried again, putting some steel in it.
"Go on! Get out of here! Go!"
The dogs did not go. Instead, they tossed looks at one another. Alex could almost hear them debating, felt the air go alive with thoughts. Then four pairs of glittering eyes swiveled back, and the hound and the very big mutt began nosing along the bank.
"What are they doing?"
Ellie said in a high voice.
"Are they going away?"
"No, they're looking for a way across."
"Why?"
"So they can come at us from both sides." The mutt and the hound were picking their way down the bank, slithering on wet leaves. She kept hoping they'd take a tumble, maybe break a leg, maybe get so wet and discouraged they'd just give up. But they didn't look like the kind of dogs that gave up. Then she remembered the dried blood on the collie, and she thought,
"Gun!
Ellie!" She craned her head over the hump of her shoulder. The girl's face was bleached of color, and she was crying silently, huge tears rolling down her cheeks.
"Ellie! The Glock! Get it!"
Ellie's eyes went even wider, but she nodded, a quick jerk like a puppet. She started backing away in little hip-hops, up and down, like a kid hitching along a balance beam. Every bounce knocked a gasp from Alex's chest, and she hissed,
"Not so fast! We've got some time! Be careful!"
"Almost there!"
Ellie wailed. She'd made it back to the V butt first, but instead of turning, she swept her right hand back to reach for the Glock nestled in its thick cradle of branches. Alex saw it right before it happened.
"Ellie, no, stop!"
Too late. Ellie's hand knocked the gun, a good solid hit that sent the pistol sailing. Ellie let out a shrill,
"No!"
She tried to snatch at the gun, but then her body shifted and she screamed again, throwing herself forward this time and wrapping her arms around the tree. Alex watched in a kind of dumb horror as the gun tumbled butt over bore, once, twice, three times, and then hit the water with a dull, wet thwunk, a sound Alex had heard countless times as a kid dropping rocks into a pond from a tire swing. She watched, helpless and sick, as the water swallowed the gun, swallowed her dad.
"I'm sorry."
Ellie's teeth showed in a tight, terrified rictus grin. She hugged the tree with both arms.
"I'm sorry. I lost my balance. I'm sorry. I'm..."
There had to be something else she could use as a weapon. Alex's eyes raked the tree, looking for something, anything. She saw that the dogs were fording the river now, carefully crossing over rocks, keeping one eye on them and the other on where they were going. She had to hurry.
"What about your knife?"
Ellie's voice was breathless with terror.
"Can you use your knife?"
"Not enough reach." The blade wasn't long, and all a dog had to do was dodge and grab her wrist, and then it was over. Drop into the river? Alex was a good swimmer. She eyed the water, saw the gush. That current was pretty fast. The rocks were slippery and the water deep and probably incredibly cold. She might make it, but she didn't think Ellie would, not with boots and a parka and clothes to drag her down. And dogs could swim, too, she knew that. Even if Alex got her feet under her, one slip and those dogs would swarm in and she'd be done. Groping beneath the tree trunk, she wrapped her hand around a branch as thick around as her wrist and pulled. The branch bent, squealed, and Alex tugged harder, heard a snap and then a splintery sound, and gasped as the branch gave so quickly that she slipped. Still clutching the branch, she squeezed her thighs around the trunk, felt her chin bang wood, and then pain, red and hot as a brand, as her teeth drove into her tongue.
"Alex! I'm okay,"
Alex said, swallowing a ball of blood. Her mouth sang with pain, her fingers knotted around the stick in a death grip.
"Go back the way you came, down that great big branch, the one you were fishing from. Hurry!"
Alex waited until Ellie had shimmied off the main trunk and begun inching onto the branch before following. She listened to the crackle of branches, holding her breath each time. "Please, God, just get us down there."
"Alex, how much farther do you want me to go?"
Alex flicked a glance. The branch was thick and stout, as big around as Ellie, and she was at the midway point. The branch bowed in a slight, gentle curve, but Ellie wasn't swaying, and Alex thought it was strong enough.
"That's good. Stay right there. I'm coming." "What are you doing? What are we going to do?"
Alex didn't answer. She wouldn't need to go far, just enough so the dogs had only one way of getting at them, a funnel leading to a chute, like the rocks on the mountain. If she was far enough from the V, the dogs would have to come single file, and that she could defend. She butted against the V, then hugged the tree as she swung her left leg up and around. There was a solid thunk as the side of her boot knocked wood, and then she was hitching up her hips, thinking, "I never was any good at balance beam."
"You're almost there," Ellie said. "Scooch up your butt."
Alex did, dropping onto the branch hard enough that she felt the bang ripple up her spine. Beneath her legs, the branch groaned and bent like an archer's bow being drawn, and Alex held her breath, waiting for the break, the crack, the sharp razor of a rock slicing the back of her head. The limb swayed, creaked like a step in a haunted house, but did not break. She felt the tiniest squeak of relief.
"Ellie, can you give me some more room?"
"Yes."
The wood shuddered in Alex's arms as Ellie scooted back, and then Alex saw the bark ripple and buckle. This time the limb protested with a loud squall that reminded Alex of forcing open a wooden door swollen with humidity on a hot summer day. "That's far enough." Maybe too far, but at least she had some maneuvering room now. She looked left, saw that the very big mutt was already across and eyeing the trunk. Then her head swiveled right, and she saw with a sudden, sickening jolt that the hound was already halfway to the V, just 20 feet away.
"Hang on, Ellie. Really, really tight. Alex, what are you going to do?"
She did not answer. Wrapping both legs around the branch, she hooked her ankles together. She hugged the tree with her left arm, but let her right fall, choking up only a little on her makeshift club. 10 feet away at the fork, the hound hesitated. It was close enough that Alex saw that its eyes were muddy brown, the whites red. Its black lips curled in a yellow snarl. Then it crept forward one step, and then another, and another. Alex swung. Her club cut the air with a whistle. The hound saw it coming, tried twisting to snatch the branch with its teeth, but it was off balance and too late. The splintery knob smacked the hound's ribs hard enough to make their perch bob, and then the dog was yelping, its nails scoring bark as it skittered over the slick wood. Still yowling, the dog tumbled from the tree and, unlike a cat, smacked the water with a mighty splash that sent up a geyser of water in an icy coronet. "Yes!" Elation thrilled through her like blood. Twisting to peer over her shoulder, Alex saw the hound's black head, sleek as oilskin, bob to the surface, but the current was swift, and the dog was a good 20 feet downstream and still picking up speed. Beyond her feet, Ellie was dripping.
"You okay?"
"Yes."
Ellie's face reflected both mingled hope and mortal terror.
"Is it dead? Will it drown?"
"No."
Alex watched as the hound battled for shore, and then, 10 seconds later, clambered into shallows on the right. Water streamed from its flanks, and then sprayed in a wide halo as the dog shook itself. In another moment, it was bounding back up the bank toward level ground.
"It's coming back! Alex, on your left! Look!"
The shepherd was working its way onto the tree as the collie watched from the safety of solid ground. Then she saw a movement to her right, and there was the very big mutt. The animal put a tentative paw on the wood, and then the dog took a step, and then another. No. The dogs were coming at them from both sides, and she knew she couldn't do this forever. If only Ellie hadn't lost the Glock, she might have... Something rocketed from the woods, something very fast, charging so quickly that Alex caught only a brown blur, and then she saw with a start that it was another dog. No, no, not another one. And then she caught its scent and thought, wait, isn't that... Mina! Ellie crowed. Mina! Chapter 19. The hound sensed something wrong. It began to turn, but it was already too late. Mina slammed into the other dog, a solid body blow that lifted the hound, upending it completely. Squealing, the hound turned an awkward somersault, coming down on its back, legs thrashing, neck exposed. Mina's head darted quick as a snake, and the hound's squeal cut out as Mina's jaws clamped around its throat. With its windpipe cut off, the hound made no sound at all. Its legs thrashed and pedaled air, and then, with a single violent twist, Mina ripped out its throat. An enormous fountain of blood erupted from the hound's neck. "Alex, look out!" Ellie shrieked. Startled, Alex whipped around just as a monstrous black shadow loomed. The mutt surged forward, jaws wide, and if Alex hadn't had just enough time to bring up her right arm, the dog would have had her. As it was, the dog caught the club between its teeth, ground down, and gave the club a vicious twist. Gasping, Alex let go and felt herself slip, and then the world tilted on its axis. Frantic, she made a last grab for the trunk, heard Ellie shout again, but she wasn't fast enough. She crashed into the water, the blow hammering the air from her lungs in a sickening whoosh. The roaring water, so cold her skin burned, closed over her head, and then a white jag flashed across her eyes as her head struck against unyielding rock. Shocked, dazed, she opened her mouth in a huge, involuntary, reflexive gasp. A torrent of frigid water poured into her mouth, rushing down her throat. In a swirl of horror, Alex felt the muscles of her throat seize, close off, and clamp down, and then the flow of water into her lungs shut off like a spigot twisted shut. The water was gone, and she wasn't choking anymore. Instead, she was suffocating. A deep red bled across her vision. Disoriented, her lungs on fire, she churned water in a wild, frothing panic, and then she was lunging for a distant glimmer, what she thought might be the surface, kicking desperately even as the water fisted her heavy boots, greedily fingered her clothes, and tried to pull her back. She shattered through the water, felt the slash of air knife her face. Coughing, Alex threw her head back, her mouth wide open, and inhaled a single shrieking gasp. Her blood roared, but her vision cleared, and then she realized that she was turned around, facing downstream and still moving, the river carrying her in a dizzying sweep. A monstrous tumble of rocks and debris loomed directly in her path, rushing for her face. Too late to flip onto her back, too late! The river flung her against stone. She felt the impact as an explosion in her left shoulder that scorched a sizzle of electric shocks all the way to her fingertips. But that was also when she realized two things at the same time. Jammed up against the rocks, almost horizontal, she felt the water suck and grab, but saw that she was in the shallows, in less than a foot of water, and that she was staring up at the sky and the mutt. Chapter 20. Water streamed from the mutt's flanks. Blood bubbled from a slash on its shoulder where it had struck a rock or snagged a branch. But it was there, and it was alive, and now the animal went for her face with a flash of fangs, white and deadly. Screaming, Alex pressed back against the rock, her only working arm, the right, flying up to protect her face. It was instinct, pure and simple, and saved her life. Crabbed on her back, unable to get to her feet, she felt the dog batten down, waited in a slow-motion dread for the jaws to grind and for her bones to break, or maybe it would go for her throat next, or even push her under the water, hold her there until she drowned. But then her arm did not break, and she realized the dog had misjudged, and that all it had was a very big mouthful of sopping wet sweatshirt. The pressure around her arm lessened for an instant as the dog let up and shifted its jaws, trying for a better grip. Mina sailed across her vision. In an instant, the mutt had let go of Alex and whirled, incredibly fast for such a large dog. The dogs crashed against one another, fangs clashing against fangs, a snarling ball of fur and muscle. Move, get up, get up, get up! Alex broke from her paralysis and scrambled on hands and knees over slippery rock, trying to get her footing. She made it to one knee, pushed to her feet, and very nearly fell again. There was blood in her mouth, her head clanged with pain, her left arm felt dead. The foaming water grabbed at her legs and tried to pull her back in. Ellie let out a piercing, terrified scream. Sick with horror and still dazed from the fall, Alex saw that the shepherd had reached the V. As Alex watched, the animal took a cautious step, and then another. On the third step, it slipped, its tail pinwheeling as it struggled to keep its balance. "Fall!" Alex thought fiercely. "Fall!" But the animal did not fall. In a second, it had righted itself, and Alex knew she would never make it to Ellie in time. She looked back at the dogs just as they broke apart. Mina was panting, the dog's chest going like a bellows. Blood flowed from a rip in her neck, and as Mina danced back, Alex saw that the dog was limping, favoring her left flank. The mutt was also bloodied, but it was a bigger, more muscular dog, and Alex thought this was a fight Mina would lose. Then Ellie screamed again, and for a precious, fatal second, Mina's attention wavered. The dog's head snapped around to search out her mistress, and the mutt saw its chance. Lowering its head, it rammed Mina, driving its shoulder into the smaller dog's chest, knocking Mina head over heels. Writhing, vainly trying to twist in midair, Mina landed with a mighty splash flat on her back. Before she could right herself, the mutt was there, its fangs curving like the slash of scimitars. At the last second, Mina flailed upright, but the mutt adjusted the arc of its attack. Its jaws closed around Mina's left foreleg. There was a loud, grinding crunch, and Mina let go of a high, eerily human shriek, and then she was on three legs, struggling to keep to her feet. "No!" Alex shouted. Her paralysis fell away, and she closed her fingers around a rock the size of her fist and then let it fly. The rock struck the dog in the ribs. With a small yip, the dog was more surprised than hurt. The mutt whirled to face this new attacker. "Oh, God!" Alex felt her insides turn to jelly. She reached to grope for another rock, not daring to take her eyes off the mutt. "If it charges, if I miss..." In the next instant, the stench that filled her nostrils was so intense, so surprising, Alex gasped. Across the stream, she saw the mutt pull up with a start, its hammer-like head swinging up and then back upstream, and she knew that the mutt smelled it too. She watched as its ears drew down tight on its skull and its tail tucked between its haunches. The mutt backed up a step, then another, and then it was splashing across the shallows and spurting up the right bank. Alex couldn't move. Balanced on three legs, Mina was rigid, the hackles bristling along her back, and then the dog was looking left, her lips peeling back in a snarl. "I know this smell," Alex thought, and then horror bloomed in her chest. "Oh, God, I know this." The stench was like summer, hot and torrid, a stink of tarry asphalt and roadkill bloated with decay. The reek was thick as fog, a plague of rotted flesh and squashed guts so bad it balled in her mouth and coated her tongue. Her eyes inched left, and that's when she saw the man. Chapter 21. He stood in the trees at nearly the same spot where the dogs had appeared. His hair was very short, a military buzz cut, and he was filthy. His clothes ragged, his skin smeary with dirt and blood. He reeked of death and decay. The wild dogs were terrified. She smelled their fear. The mutt had darted into the woods, but the collie was still there on the high bank, only 20 feet away from the man. Head low, teeth bared, the dog had shrunk back toward the river, but could retreat no farther. On the tree, and only 10 feet from Ellie, the shepherd had turned to stone. Ellie spoke first.
"Help us! Please help us!"
The man opened his mouth, and for a crazy second Alex thought they might actually be all right, a hope that fizzled fast. What came from the man's mouth was a formless bellow, something so primitive it raised the hairs on Alex's neck. And then he was moving, charging, arms out, hands fixed into claws, that wild roar going on and on. Alex had just enough time to think, "God, no, Ellie!" The man charged straight at the collie. He was insanely fast and as agile as a panther. The collie immediately sprang to its right, but it was too close to the edge. One back paw swung out over the drop, and the collie skidded. In the next second, the man's hand shot out and grabbed a handful of the collie's matted fur. The dog let out a high, blood-curdling yelp as its feet left the ground, and then the man was swinging it, spinning the helpless animal around, using the collie's weight the way an athlete built speed to throw a shot put. He smashed the collie against a tree. There was a sickening thunk, and then the dog let out an abortive "arr!" dropping in a loose heap like a sack of wheat. Foaming, the crazy man loomed for a moment over the stunned dog. Then he reached down, hooked a hand on either jaw, and gave a vicious yank, scissoring the collie's jaws apart. There was a snap of bone, a ripping sound like cloth being torn in two. The collie let out a deep, guttural shriek as its mouth split. Ellie screamed. Alex watched, a cold fist of horror where her heart had been, as the man bent over the dazed, bleeding animal. For an insane moment, Alex thought he was going to kiss it. Instead, he wrapped up the dog in a gigantic bear hug, literally clasped the dog to his chest and squeezed. There came a series of popping, splintering sounds as the dog's ribs broke. Huge bubbles of crimson blood boiled from the dog's mouth, but the collie made not a sound, not even a whimper, because it couldn't. The man was crushing the life out of it, driving the air from its ruined lungs. Incredibly, the man laughed. The sound was gleeful and crazy, and drove spiders scurrying up and down Alex's back. Still laughing, the man reached into the collie's mouth and tore out the animal's tongue. "Alex?" Ellie quavered. She tried twisting around on her perch. "Alex!" She couldn't answer, didn't dare. Pressed against her side, Mina was trembling. Alex watched as the man bit into the thick, still dripping flap of muscle, tore off a chunk and chewed, and then just as quickly spat it out. Ellie let out a screech of revulsion and terror, and Alex thought, "No, no, honey, be quiet!" On the tree above Ellie, the shepherd came alive. It tried backing down the limb, but the animal was panicked, moving too quickly. Alex heard the loud skittering of its nails on the wood, and then the shepherd slipped sideways. It bulleted for the water, bouncing off the hump of a nearby boulder before doing a spectacular belly flop. An instant later, the dog's head bobbed to the surface, and then it was pulling furiously for the far shore, even as the river swept it downstream toward Alex and Mina. The sound of the splash made the crazy man look up. His chest was a fan of blood. His smeary chin glistened. Alex didn't move. She finally understood why rabbits went so still. "Don't see me. Don't notice me." She saw him glance downstream at the shepherd, which had made the shore now less than 10 feet from Alex. By her side, Mina let out a warning growl, and Alex felt a spike of alarm. But the shepherd was interested only in getting away, and it ignored them, lunging up the bank and out of sight. Alex's eyes shifted back, and then she felt the day crash down. The man was on his feet now. Still clinging to the tree, Ellie seemed to have finally gotten the message. She had gone small and pink and still, but it was no use. The crazy man knew she was there, and Alex saw in a flash that he meant to have her. She would never scale the bank in time. He was too far away for a rock, so she did the only thing she could. "Hey!" Splashing across the shallows, she hit the left bank at a run and plowed up the incline. "Hey! Over here! Hey!" It worked. The man rounded, his mad eyes swimming with hemorrhage, and that dead, hot summer stink washed over Alex again. His face twisted, and then he was starting for her, mouth open, clots of gore and stringy flesh hanging from his teeth. Mina raced past, faster than Alex would have thought possible for a dog with only 3 good legs, there and then gone in a flash. The dog sprang, battening down on the man's right arm. Bawling, the man jerked Mina, not a small dog, clean off her feet. Still howling, the man twisted first one way and then the other, but Mina hung on, her body whipping back and forth like a flag in a stiff breeze. With a roar, the man drew back his left fist in a wild roundhouse punch. He was aiming for Mina's head, but the dog saw the blow coming and let go of the man's right arm. As soon as her hind legs hit the ground, Mina launched herself in one nearly seamless movement, her jaws wide, making the switch from right arm to left. Catching the man's wrist, the dog ground down with an audible grinding crunch. The crazy man let go of a high, gargling scream and began backpedaling, crashing against a tree, twisting and turning, spinning in a wild, jittery dance. In the next instant, Alex heard the unmistakable sound of a bolt being thrown, and then a commanding rap. "Call off your dog!" Across the river, Alex saw another man pushing from the woods, rifle held high. He was much younger, closer to her age, and his face was streaked with grime, a slick of brown curls plastered to his forehead.
"Call it off! Do it now! Hurry!"
"Mina!" Alex shouted, and then desperately, "Mina! Come off! Off!" Incredibly, it worked. Mina bounded away, lunging for her, and then spinning around, pressed against Alex as if to stand between her and the crazy man. Dropping to her knees, Alex threw her arms around the dog, fisting her hands into the scruff of the dog's neck. "Good girl! Stay! Stay!" The crazy man bellowed. His face twisted, his eyes shone from his bloody face like beacons, unearthly and mad. "Jim!" shouted the man with the rifle. "Jim! Over here! Here!" The crazy man, Jim, whipped around to face him. The reek of death and insanity steamed from his pores, wreathing him in a thick, choking stink as tangible as smoke. Throwing his head back, Jim bayed, a weird, eerie howl that spiked her brain, a sound she would never forget. "God forgive me," the young man said, and squeezed the trigger. The slug drilled Jim between the eyes and exited in a mist of blood and brain and bone. Jim's arms dropped limp and lifeless to his sides, as if he were a marionette suddenly without his puppeteer, and then his legs folded and he toppled from the bank. His head struck a boulder, and then the current grabbed him, sweeping him downstream. The water might have carried him to the shallows, but his foot wedged in a rock tumble and held him there. A few moments later, the water bled in a swirl of burgundy red that widened to the black maw of a whirlpool as Alex's vision began to fade and her mind wobbled.
"Alex?"
Ellie's voice sounded very far away.
"Alex, are you okay?"
"No, I don't think so."
Alex began to fall as the whirlpool sucked her down, dragged her under.
"I think I'm passing."
Chapter 22. When she woke, the light was gone, the darkness was heavy and hot, and her head was splitting. She couldn't move, couldn't see, and she thought,
"This is it. I've stroked out, and I'm going to die."
She let out a long, low moan.
"Alex?"
A metallic snick, a spear of white light, and then she felt the girl's arms thread around her throat.
"Alex?"
"Ellie,"
she breathed in relief. Her own arms were snarled in a tangle of oversized flannel shirt, and she had to work to shuck free of the sleeping bag. The movement made her head ache, but she didn't care.
"Hey,"
she said, hugging the girl close. "You okay?"
"I'm fine."
Ellie's head moved against her neck, and then Alex felt the splash of tears.
"I was so scared that maybe you were dead. Hey, it's okay. We're okay."
Right about then, she realized that other than the shirt and panties, she was naked, and her skin was slick with sweat. The dull red eye of a catalytic heater glowed in one corner, and she thought, "Tent. I'm in a tent." Everything came back then. The pack of wild dogs, the river, that choking stink of death, Jim, and...
"Ellie, where are we?" "In Tom's tent. Don't you remember?"
"No." "Well, I remember the guy with the gun."
"That's Tom."
"Tom?"
"Yeah, Tom Eden. He carried you back and fixed up your head. He said in the army you learn how to do a lot of stuff."
"My..."
Her hand crept over her hair to a rough square of gauze bandage with something prickly beneath. Stitches. She must have been really out not to have felt those.
"How long have I been asleep? What day is it?"
"Thursday. You were asleep for all of yesterday and today."
2 days?
"Uh-huh. Tom said you had a concussion. He said it was a wonder you hadn't passed out way before you did. He's outside making dinner. I came in to see if maybe you were awake."
"Where are my clothes?"
"Right here."
Ellie aimed the light to the right. The hiking pants and underwear were Alex's, but the rest, a forest green turtleneck, a set of long black underwear, a pair of wool socks draped over her hiking boots, was not. The flannel shirt she wore was probably Tom's, too, which meant a whole bunch of other things, all of them boiling down to his having undressed her, like, completely. which she just didn't want to think about, much less try to remember.
Okay, she said. Tell him I'll be right out.
Mina spotted her first. Her tail thumped, and then she was heaving to a stand. Her left leg was splinted, but she pranced over to Alex, who dropped to her knees and wrapped the dog up in a hug.
Good girl, she said. You are such a good girl.
Welcome back. Alex looked up to see Tom by the fire, poking at something sizzling in a cast-iron skillet. How are you feeling? The questions were in her mouth, but then she caught a whiff of frying meat and sputtering fat that made the words drown as her mouth watered.
Oh, my God, that smells great. What is it?
Raccoon and white beans, and there's tea.
Raccoon?
She saw Ellie put a hand to her mouth to cover the giggles, and then looked back at Tom.
Like, you caught it?
Well, it sure didn't get FedExed. Besides, the dog needs the meat. Look, sit before you fall down.
Ellie said you think I have had a concussion? Aren't you not supposed to sleep if you've had a concussion?
Well, I guess you had other ideas, he said, and she decided Tom Eden had a very nice smile, especially that dimple on the left. He wasn't that much older, either. Maybe 19, 20? She wondered if there was a graceful way to figure that out, and then wondered why she was wondering. Tom said, How does your head feel?
Like someone bashed it with a brick.
I'll bet. I've got some ibuprofen, but you should get something in your stomach. He aimed a knife. Med's in that canvas bag over there, and you can use that jacket. It'll be a little big, but it's better than nothing. Sorry about your sweatshirt, but it was pretty badly ripped, and I used it for the dog's splint. The coat was a lot better than nothing. Charcoal gray and long enough to fall midway between her butt and knees. The fabric gave off a musky scent that smelled of safety, like being wrapped up in strong arms that you knew would never let go. Tom held up a mug and an aluminum camp plate heaped high. I know you're hungry, but take it slow, okay? Be nice if that stayed down. Ellie was already gobbling, and Alex's stomach was screaming with hunger, but she made no move to take the food.
Look, I don't mean to sound ungrateful, and I know you shot that guy.
That guy's name was Jim. He was a really good friend of mine, and you're welcome.
Oh, I'm sorry. And thank you. For saving us, I mean.
She wouldn't back down.
But I don't know you, and I don't remember what happened after you shot your friend.
Well, you passed out. Any closer to the river, and I'd have had to go in after you. After I made sure you were still breathing. Ellie, what happened next?
You helped me get off the tree, Tom,
Ellie said. Her chin glistened with grease. She beamed at Alex.
Tom let me carry his gun.
Which you did very well, said Tom,
because you had to carry Alex and her head was bleeding like stink.
Which it was. Tom looked back at Alex. Then I stitched you up and set up camp. Got Ellie out of her wet clothes, and then Ellie and I got you out of your wet clothes, and then... Do you really want me to go on?
No.
Yes.
She hugged herself.
Are you a nurse, or like in medical school? How do you know so much?
You learn basic battlefield medicine in the army, and then some, if you hang around the medics and care to learn.
Okay. So if you're in the army, how come you're here?
I'm on leave from Afghanistan. We were camping, me, Jim, his uncle Stan, and Jim's dad, Earl. Jim was my team leader, and no, I can't tell you exactly where we were because then I'd have to kill you. She tried not to smile.
That's not very funny.
No, I guess it isn't.
Where is Stan? Where's Earl?
Look, I'll be happy to answer all your questions after we eat.
When she remained on her feet, he placed the mug and plate on the ground.
At least sit down.
Why?
Because when you pass out again and fall into the fire, I don't want to have to put out your hair, and I'm kind of partial to that turtleneck. Now she did smile.
She lowered herself to a cross-legged sit. Better?
Much. His dimple showed. In the firelight, his skin glowed orange. Ellie said you were kind of stubborn.
Oh, yeah?
Alex shot Ellie a look of mock outrage.
She say anything about herself?
She said you used to think she was a pain.
Well, said Alex, fishing up her plate, she was.
Hello, I'm right here,
said Ellie, sounding very pleased. I think, given everything that's happened, we're all entitled to a couple of bad days, said Tom. Alex spooned a mouthful of beans and meat. The smell was so good she thought she was going to faint. Do you know what's going on?
Food first, said Tom. Then we'll talk.
Despite Tom's warning, taking it slow with the food was hard, what with her stomach clawing a hole right through her gut. The raccoon was tough and a little gamey, but she was too starved to care. She shoveled down mouthful after mouthful, chasing the food with gulps of tea until her spoon clicked metal and her mug was empty. To her right, Mina let out a plaintive whine, and Alex put her plate on the ground for the dog to lick clean.
There, don't say I never gave you anything.
That dog eats like a horse.
Tom refilled her mug. If you're up to it, we can hit the trail again tomorrow morning. Ellie said you were headed for the ranger station?
Nodding, she sucked back a mouthful of tea, let it roll around her tongue, tasted the sweetness and an edge of char.
Russian something or other, she thought. Her mother had been the tea drinker.
It was the only thing I could think of. I mean, other than going back to my car, but I don't think my car will start.
Yeah, I'd say that's a safe bet.
Do you know what happened?
You mean to Jim or to everything?
Yes.
She tried to make it a joke, and then thought there really wasn't anything about the situation that was remotely funny. Ellie came to snuggle, and she hugged the girl close as Mina finished with the plate and came to lie against Alex's left thigh. She saw Tom's eyes flick to Ellie as if he were debating what to say.
Look, I only have a couple ideas, and not all of them make sense, especially about...
He gestured at his own head.
You know, what happened to Jim or his dad. In the firelight, his eyes, she suddenly remembered that they were a strange, smoky blue in daylight, were black.
For a disquieting moment, she thought of the dead woman with her glasses on a keeper chain and nothing but empty sockets. She wanted to ask about Jim, but she had so many questions she didn't know where to start.
Did you feel it? The zap?
Is that what you're calling it?
She nodded.
Did it happen down here in the valley?
Oh, yeah. I thought my head was going to explode. Okay, that wasn't good.
The mountain was about 20 miles away. She pushed through the ache in her head to do the math, and then wished she hadn't. Assuming the zap spread in a circle, that meant it had hit the entire Waccamaw and beyond.
Are your electronics dead, too?
All the solid-state stuff, yeah.
So what could do that?
Well, Tom's eyes dropped to the fire and then rose to meet hers again. I don't know for sure. I mean, we're in the middle of the woods and we've got no way of getting information, you know? But I know the military, and we're testing out stuff all the time. So based on that and some other things I know, just putting it together, I think it was an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse. Probably more than one, too. A single EMP's not supposed to fry people. Actually, I don't think that's supposed to happen if you set off 20. That's the theory, at least. No one's ever tested it out before.
So what's an EMP supposed to do?
You ever see Ocean's 11?
She thought back.
Is that the one with Brad Pitt and Clooney? That's like ancient.
My mom likes it. Well, she likes George Clooney. Anyway, this is like that movie. You remember the pinch? What they used to knock out the power?
Alex recalled Don Cheadle covering his crotch.
I remember something about X-rays.
Yeah, that's what a real pinch would do. Release this big burst of X-rays. It takes a lot more power than what they showed in the movie, and a real pinch is way too big to fit into a van. But the X-rays aren't what caused the blackout they showed in the movie. That was an EMP. Electromagnetic pulse.
You mean like a big power surge? That's what happened to us?
I think so. It's the only thing that makes sense. Take a bunch of EMPs, set them off high enough, and let them spread along the Earth's magnetic field, and you'd fry anything that relies on solid-state electronics. You'd also kill power grids, communications arrays, just zap, like you said. People say there are ways to protect their gear, but again, that's all theory. Sort of like building a fallout shelter, hoping that the design will get you through the next nuclear war without ever testing whether that's true.
Is that what made my iPod get hot?
Asked Ellie. Probably. That's also why the LEDs don't work, but those flashlights with old-fashioned bulbs do. Even if we could find an old tube radio, or a vintage truck or car with a radio, I'll bet there's no one broadcasting, at least not around here. If it was a bunch of EMPs, there's no power, and all the computers would be fried anyway. Low-orbit satellites might get toasted, too. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Alex pressed a finger to the drill bit of an ache in her right temple. Why does it have to be everything? Maybe it's like you said, just over the Waccamaw. That's still a lot of territory, but have you seen any airplanes since this... Tom waved a hand. This zap? Alex's jaw tightened.
No, that doesn't mean anything.
A lie. The Waccamaw was isolated, but she'd seen plenty of lacy white contrails stitched against blue sky from high-altitude planes before the zap. You remember 9/11?
Not me,
said Ellie. She sounded subdued and a little shaky, and Alex hugged the girl a little closer.
I wasn't born yet.
I wasn't much older than Ellie is now. All I remember is what we saw on TV and the principal calling a special assembly, Alex said. I was 10, and that's about all I remember, too, Tom said. But my dad was overseas when it happened. Right after, all the airplanes in the U.S. were grounded. No planes from anywhere were allowed to enter our airspace for days. My dad was stuck. He didn't make it home for another week.
So?
So what I'm saying is that we haven't seen any planes. The zap happened 6 days ago. Either no one's allowed to fly, or the planes can't fly.
So we got attacked?
Alex's thoughts jumped to Aunt Hannah, all by herself in their condo off Lake Michigan.
Hold on. If it only happened here, she's fine. Like 9/11?
Tom nodded. Or some big accident. The military tests weapon systems all the time. Those are the only things I can think of.
Is that how come the moon's blue?
Asked Ellie.
Alex said the sky doesn't look right. Is that why?
Tom's eyebrows rose with interest. What have you noticed?
Just that the stars are a little hazy.
She wished Ellie hadn't brought that up. Wrapping her head around what Tom was suggesting was hard enough. She gave a hurried explanation and then added reluctantly,
The sunsets are weird. They're too red. Would a bunch of EMPs do that?
Tom raised his hands in a helpless gesture. Your guess is as good as mine. Some stuff fits, other stuff doesn't. For example, the sunsets... In Iraq and Afghanistan, they're also very red, but that's because of all the dust and sand. Would dust account for the haziness of the stars, too? That made sense. But what could kick up that much dirt? For her, 9/11 was more of an impression than something she really remembered. She'd been young, so the attack didn't make much of a dent. Images of crumbling towers and pillars of smoky ash were about all she could recall.
Ash and smoke.
All of a sudden, she wished she could boot up a computer and search for sunset and smoke and red. Aloud, she said,
So we don't know anything for sure?
Not without more information, said Tom. All I know is that one EMP at the right altitude and over the geographic center of the U.S. is enough to take out North America.
One?
That would account for why there are no planes and why our electronics don't work.
What could do that?
Tom looked unhappy. Two ways I know of. Either a nuclear weapon detonated at high altitude.
Nuclear?
Alex thought of mushroom clouds on the horizon, firestorms and radiation sickness, of ash and smoke.
If it was a nuclear bomb over the Waccamaw, wouldn't there be a cloud?
Depends on where it was detonated, Tom said. If the bomb went off high enough, we wouldn't even see the flash.
Well, I don't like that,
Ellie quavered.
What's the second way?
An E-bomb, one designed to release an EMP. Neither alternative sounded good. This was like when Barrett gave her the pros and cons of radiation. There's a chance of more burn injury or knocking out your brainstem, but at least your bone marrow will be unaffected.
Which do you think it was?
Alex asked. Tom shrugged. Either? Both? I don't know. North Korea's got bombs. Iran's making nuclear weapons. Israel's already got them. And there's Russia. An E-bomb isn't that hard to make, either. You can look on the internet for the schematics. I'm sure our military has them. But you've got the same problem of delivering them to the target as you do with nukes. If you're talking large scale, that means missiles. But then the chances that someone sees you coming are high. They'll counterattack before it's too late. If it's a bad enough attack, they'll lob everything they've got. They call it mutually assured destruction, which is just another way of saying the scenario's a no-win situation. You attack us, we'll blast you back to the Stone Age and take the world down with us.
How do you know so much? Ellie demanded. You can't know.
Tom looked suddenly tired. I know enough. I'm an explosive ordnance disposal expert.
What's that mean?
Asked Ellie. It means, Tom Eden said, that I'm the guy they send out to make sure the bombs don't go off.
Well then, you did a really sucky job, Tom,
said Ellie, and burst into tears. Chapter 23
He's wrong.
Ellie's eyes were swollen, and the tip of her nose was red, but the rest of her face was pinched and too white in the glare of Alex's flashlight. The tent was warm enough, but Ellie couldn't stop shivering, even with Mina curled alongside her. She bunched the sleeping bag under her chin.
He doesn't know.
Alex cast about for something more reassuring to say, unsure if her shakiness was only due to the after effects of a concussion. She ended up smoothing Ellie's damp hair from her forehead.
He's just guessing, Ellie.
Privately, she had to admit that what Tom said made some sense, even if an EMP didn't account for everything. Unless there was more than one, or maybe a lot of EMPs combined with something else. But with what?
But what about those kids we saw? Could all those
electromagnetic pulses?
Yeah. Could a lot of them at the same time do that? Make you go crazy and eat people?
I don't know, Ellie. Ellie's eyes shone like twin high beams.
When you were asleep, Tom said it wouldn't be safe to go back home right away, especially to any of the cities. He said that if this was really big, there wouldn't be power or water, and no way to get food because nothing would work. People would be scared and maybe hurting each other.
Alex opened her mouth to reply, but then came the sound of the tent being unzipped, and a moment later, Tom stuck his head in. How are we doing in here? He asked.
You're wrong,
Ellie said, without a lot of heat.
We were just talking about you,
Alex said. I knew my ears were burning. Tom shouldered his way in. The tent was a two-man and a tight fit. Alex felt Tom at her back, and she could smell him, too. The fragrance of wood smoke and musk so potent it made her a little dizzy. What's up? He asked.
We were wondering,
Alex began. When she turned to look over her shoulder, their faces were inches apart. His cinnamon-colored hair, thick and wavy, was must, and his cheeks rosy, as if he'd just come in from a ski slope, and he smelled so good. Her pulse jumped at a powerful tug of attraction.
Ellie said you think we shouldn't go back.
Tom's eyes flicked to Ellie, then back. We can talk about this in the morning, you know, after Ellie gets some rest. She got the message.
Sure.